This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF, AM 680, and WPTF.com. Joined by Mary Lucas from Transitions Life Care, here's your host, Jason Kong.
Welcome to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9, 107.5, and AM 680. WPTF News Talk Traffic. Thank you so much for being here with us today. I'm Jason Kong, and you know, Mary Lucas is on assignment today, so we are always pleased to have welcomed into the studio as a guest host, Betsy Barton. Betsy, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well. How about you?
I'm doing great, Betsy. I'm always excited to have you in the studio because you always bring in a fascinating guest for us to speak with. And I failed to give you your title, Betsy. Betsy is the Senior Associate for Community Engagement at Transitions Life Care. And Betsy, we've got an interesting discussion centered around aquamation. And we've got Hunter Beatty here in the studio, owner of Endswell. Hunter, thank you for being here with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Betsy, where should we start?
Well, I think we should start with how it all started, Hunter. So set the stage for us. How did you come to be a funeral home director at Endswell?
Sure. So I am not a funeral director. Oh. I actually have no background in this industry. In January 2022, I was sitting next to a cemetery in Carrboro, North Carolina, and I was doom scrolling. I was looking at all the bad stuff happening in the world, the Thwaites Doomsday Glacier, the Cascadian Subduction Zone, and a tsunami inundating Seattle. Bad stuff, right? So I stumble upon this article that Desmond Tutu, former Archbishop of Cape Town, Nobel Prize winner, anti-apartheid activist, and climate activist, he chose aquamation after he died, water cremation. And I'd never heard of it before. But coincidentally, I'm sitting next to the cemetery, and it's the first time I noticed that all the flowers are plastic. It's the first time I contemplated this practice of preserving a dead body with formaldehyde, placing that body into a shiny, ornate, non-biodegradable casket, that casket then going into a concrete burial vault, and all of this happening in the middle of our towns and cities that are in the midst of an affordable housing crisis. So all of these articles made the case that these modern funeral practices are unsustainable, they're expensive, and they're bad for the environment. So I was inspired by this. I read every article I could about Desmond Tutu's decision, about aquamation, about the funeral industry. And 2 weeks later, my wife and I put a deposit on a $300,000 aquamation machine.
No way.
With no place to put it. And again, no background in this industry.
Wow. That's jumping right in there, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, she's used to my impulsive behavior and my impulsive decisions and tolerates it. I think it's a little exciting. She puts me in check. But she was all in for this as well.
Uh-huh. That's great. You need to have a dreamer and a visionary, but it's also great to have someone on the team who says, so what's the first step? How are we going to afford this? All those kind of things.
Yeah. Her first question was, don't you have to be a funeral director to have a funeral home? I was like, no, I don't think you do.
Oh, that's great. Well, so then where did you go from there?
So we put the deposit on the machine. Then we had to buy a building. My background originally was in nonprofit work. I kind of fell off that path and played the real estate game for a while. So we had some money from my little real estate operations. And my wife, Veronica Beatty, had a very successful career in the utility scale solar industry. So both of those together gave us some money to pursue this project. So we bought a building in Hillsboro at 407 Meadowlands Drive, about a mile from downtown. And I flew to Las Vegas in July of 2022, trained on how to use the aquamation machine for 3 days, came back, got licensed, and we officially opened October 22nd, 2022 as the Triangle's first aquamation facility, and we're now a full funeral home offering cremation, green burial, and aquamation.
Interesting. You know, there's a lot of things in when you were talking about sitting by that cemetery that I just never really thought about, and I would imagine that most of the American public is with me on that. We don't really think about these things.
Right.
But when, you know, when I give my talks out in the community, I often talk about, well, let's think about now versus 120 years ago. You know, the leading causes of death back in 1917 were accidents, illnesses, and childbirth. If you had the flu, maybe you survived and maybe you didn't. If you had an infection from a farming accident or you were in a car accident, maybe you healed and maybe you didn't because there were no antibiotics.
Sure.
And so, you know, I see what you're doing as kind of catching up with, in the same way that we now have palliative care and all these kinds of ways for people to decide. There's so many treatment options. They need to have information about, well, how am I going to figure out how to get through this maze? And so Aquamation is kind of bringing us into the 21st century, I think.
It is. I think Aquamation is bringing us into the 21st century, but also it's a part of this larger green burial movement, this reemergence of environmentally friendly death care practices. The majority of people on the planet practice green or natural burial. They probably don't call it that, but the majority of our ancestors practice green or natural burial. Mm-hmm. And that's just burial without embalming chemicals, without a non-biodegradable casket or a concrete vault. The body is not preserved with chemicals. Rather, it's placed into a biodegradable shroud, a family quilt, or a simple pine casket. And that is what the majority of our ancestors practiced up until embalming really took off after the Civil War.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Sure. So Union soldiers were dying in the South, and the railroads refused to transport their bodies that were decomposing back up north. Mm. So Abraham Lincoln ordered that, if feasible, field embalmers would go out into the field and preserve their bodies using creosote, alcohol, turpentine, and arsenic. Mm. And then after the Civil War, this really took off as a cultural practice. And it's the first time in our history of death care where you suddenly needed a professional, a specialist who understood the arterial network of the human body, who knew how to embalm the body, and who had access to these specialized chemicals. So this practice rose and has rose really until cremation took off in the early 1900s and up until, you know, 1950. Cremation was first developed in the late 1800s, but it took until 1950 to even reach a 3% cremation rate. We're now at about a 65% cremation rate. It's just so much more affordable, convenient, and simple for the family. They don't have a huge funeral service to organize in the immediate aftermath of death. And Aquamation is kind of piggybacking on that. It has the environmental benefits of green burial, but the convenience and affordability of cremation.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And just to be clear, when you're talking about cremation coming into practice, we're talking about the United States.
Yes.
Because I think about India, and they've been cremating bodies for, you know, I'd have to guess, but thousands of years, right?
Yeah, on a funeral pyre. And we help many families in this area who are Hindu, and they typically choose cremation instead of aquamation. There's actually a common misconception that cremation reduces the body to ash. Cremation reduces the body to rigid bone fragments, and so does aquamation. So actually, when we're helping families from parts of Southeast Asia or India, there's a special form they often sign that allows us to not break those bone fragments down into the bone dust or the ash. And they're claiming a religious exemption for that.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Well, that's really... It's kind of fascinating to talk about this stuff. You know, we don't usually talk about it, and I haven't ever read the books. Like, is it Caitlin Dougherty?
Yeah,
who is a
New York Times bestseller, funeral director, really kind of lifting the veil, telling you what really happens in the funeral home. We're in a unique position because people ask us, how does Aquamation work? Typically, families don't go into the funeral home and say, well, how do they make room for the embalming fluid? How hot is the crematorium? You know, they don't ask these questions. We all have a tendency to scrutinize something that's new and different much more than the thing we feel like we already know. Yeah. So we're always asked, how does aquamation work? What happens to the water after the process? People don't ask those questions about cremation or embalming. And Caitlin Doty, she really helps lift that veil. She's the founder of the Order of the Good Death and really spearheading this good death movement, encouraging people to have more open and honest conversations about planning.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Excellent. Well, we're having a fascinating conversation with Hunter Beatty. He is owner of Endswell. We're going to continue our conversation with him. Betsy Barton is in for Mary Lucas this week, and we will be right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9, 107.5, and AM 680 WPTF. News, talk, traffic.
This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF, AM 680, and WPTF.com with your hosts, Mary Lucas and Jason Kong.
Welcome back to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9, 107.5, and AM 680, WPTF, news, talk, traffic. Hey, if you want to learn more about Transitions Life Care, be sure to go online to transitionslifecare.org. There are plenty of resources available for you online. There's contact information as well. Transitionslifecare.org is the place to go. I'm Jason Kong here with Betsy Barton in the studio. She's filling in for Mary Lucas today. Betsy is the Senior Associate for Community Engagement at Transitions Life Care, and we are having a fun conversation with Hunter Beatty. Hunter is owner of Endswell, and they specialize in aquamation. We got Hunter's, Endswell's origin story. And Betsy, just before we took a break, we were kind of leading into this conversation about how people have a lot of questions about what aquamation is and how the process works.
Yeah, I would love to hear more about that. I bet others are curious as well. Just what is it? How does it work? What happens to what's left? All those kind of things. Give us the details.
Sure. So aquamation, also known as water cremation, is quite simply an environmentally friendly alternative to fire cremation. We're using an alkaline solution instead of the high heat used in a cremation chamber. So with cremation, you're heating a body to 1,800, 2,000 degree temperatures, and you're essentially combusting the body. And the part of the body that breaks down after death, the soft tissue, it's going up through the chimney in the form of soot and various carcinogenic and toxic gases. So one of the environmental benefits of aquamation is that by not burning the body, there's no carbon emission, there's no greenhouse gas emissions, and it's using about a tenth of the energy. Mm-hmm. So this process of aquamation or water cremation is also called alkaline hydrolysis. Alkaline hydrolysis is the legal name. It is the chemical process involved. So this alkaline solution of 95% water and 5% potassium hydroxide, it circulates around the body for about 4 hours. And it's essentially converting the carbohydrates, fats, and proteins in the body into amino acids. And what's left behind are bone remains. Families often wonder, do I get anything back? Do I get water back? No, you get bone dust back, the same as you do with regular cremation.
Mm, okay. And if I were to go to your facility, which I have been to your facility, and we'll talk a little bit more about how other people can go as well and visit in a minute, but when I walk on, if I'm a family member and I am having somebody aquamated, what do I see when I go there? If I even choose to go there, right? I don't have to choose to ever set foot there, right?
Right. So, you know, we live in a pretty death-denying, death-phobic society. That's been a challenge for us, right? We're offering aquamation, which no one's heard of, and we're in an industry that no one really wants to talk about. I think the trust score of the funeral director is just above used car salesmen. And then hospice nurse is probably at the other end of that spectrum, along with firefighters. So, you know, this is not a super popular industry, but we're trying to do things very differently. family at Innswell. And we're very transparent. We tell people about how the process works when they ask. And there are families who want to see the process, people who want to look at the aquamation machine. So with cremation, there's a giant oven, right? Mm-hmm. You'll see the chimney and the gas supply lines. It's very industrial. You know, both are a mechanical process to accomplish what green burial, natural burial, accomplishes in the soil. Rather than the body breaking down over 6 to 9 months in the soil if buried, cremation takes 2 hours. Aquamation takes 4 hours. So we're doing this rapidly so the bone remains can be returned to the family to be kept in an urn. But when a family comes in, what they would see is a giant stainless steel cylinder. The body is placed in the cylinder, the door is closed, and then the cylinder fills up with this alkaline solution. It gradually circulates around the body, and then we cool down the machine. We're not reaching anywhere near the temperatures of cremation, which is one reason why people consider this a gentler process on the body. That and we also return more bone remains than cremation does. We don't lose any to the chimney effect of bone remains going up through the chimney. So what people would see is the stainless steel cylinder. And when we remove the body at the end, there are bone fragments.
Mm-hmm. When I visited your facility, it kind of reminded me of the giant stainless steel things they used to make beer in.
Most people say it looks like an iron lung.
I'm surprised people know what an iron lung is.
Well, we have an older demographic, remember.
That's true. When I was young, I did see somebody. My mom took me to visit somebody from our church who was actually in an iron lung machine,
wow,
like one of those cylindrical things, and she had to lie on her back all day long. She could only come out just very quickly to like take a shower, you know, get bathed or something like that. But anyway, I thought that's a real dying piece of knowledge, no pun intended. So how long does it take?
Sure.
So, is that too graphic a question?
No. So, you know, a cremation typically takes two to three hours, and aquamation takes about 4 to 6 hours.
Mm. Okay. And I know that sometimes when people have a loved one cremated, they'll actually go to the facility. Does that ever happen with aquamation?
Sure. So there's this, you just mentioned it, the witness cremation. The family is actually present for the cremation process. As part of this eco-friendly death care movement and good death movement, we're trying to get families back involved in the care of their loved ones. So families will often participate in bathing the body, putting essential oils on the body, shrouding the body. And we do have families who are interested in shrouding the body prior to the aquamation. For green burial, we shroud the body in cotton. For aquamation, silk. Silk is protein-based and breaks down in the machine, and it felt like a much more dignified way of treating the body, caring for the body, than what most aquamation facilities do, and that's place the body into a plastic bag, bioplastic bag. North Carolina law requires that someone be cremated or aquamated in a container, and with cremation, that's a cardboard box. So both are a little... It seems a little undignified. That's the way you leave this world, in a cardboard box or a plastic bag. So we shroud the body in organic silk.
Interesting. You know, it really brings me back to what I was saying before about how things were so different 100, 120 years ago. You know, my mother's family all grew up in rural North Carolina, and you know, they had the equivalent of what we would now call a group house, you know, with, you know, they had three generations of people living in the same house in Nashville. And when someone died, they were right there. So I love how what you're doing isn't just about the science of it, but it's about the culture of, yeah, we were all born. I say in my classes, as far as I know, we were all born and we're all going to go at some point, unless there's something you're not telling me. But, you know, I love how you all are folding in the cultural aspect, too, of, you know, this is doesn't have to be something that we fear.
Right. I think because we're not funeral directors, we do have a funeral director on staff. We're a full funeral home. But because we don't have a background in this, we didn't have to – you know, do what every other funeral home is doing. Most funeral homes return remains in a cardboard or plastic box. And the idea is that you come to the funeral home to pick it up and you can be upsold on an urn that's been mass produced in China. So we include a bamboo urn, an eco-friendly, biodegradable bamboo urn with our service, and we hand deliver it to the family. So at each step, with each thing that we do, we're just trying to tweak it and do it in a way like we would want it for our own family members. And that gets down to this idea of, you know, the cardboard box for cremation or the plastic bag for aquamation. If something happened to my own family member, I would want them shrouded in silk. I would want them cared for in a dignified manner.
Mm, beautiful.
We are speaking with Hunter Beatty. Hunter is owner of Endswell, and we're talking all about aquamation, and we're going to continue our conversation with him. Don't forget, we've got Betsy Barton here in the studio in for Mary Lucas this week, and we will be right back in just a bit. Stick around. You are listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9, 107.5, and AM 680, WPTF, News, Talk, Traffic.
This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF, AM 680, and WPTF.com. 60 minutes devoted to giving you all the information you need when caring for a loved one with Mary Lucas and Jason Kong. If you have questions for the show, you can email agingmatters@transitionslifecare.org.
You're listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9, 107.5, and AM 680 WPTF, News, Talk, Traffic. Thank you so much for being here with us today. I'm Jason Kong alongside Betsy Barton today. She's the Senior Associate for Community Engagement at Transitions Life Care, and she's doing a masterful job of filling in for Mary Lucas this week. And we are very pleased to have in the studio with us as a guest, Hunter Beatty, who is owner of Endswell, and they specialize in aquamation, water-based form of cremation. And Betsy, we've covered a lot of ground so far. You know, we spent some time talking about the interesting process of aquamation and how it works, what the facility kind of looks like. But we want to shift gears in this segment with Hunter to focus on the community aspect of Endswell and aquamation.
Yeah, I'm fascinated to hear about how it's gone since your epiphany in the cemetery. How has it been going? How has the community responded to this new thing that you're introducing in North Carolina?
Yeah, we've been blown away by the community's response. I mean, this really is the most meaningful and amazing thing I've ever done. And I had no interest in getting into death care, end-of-life care. It was not on the radar at all, and it came out of nowhere. But the community's response has been wonderful. We've met some of the most amazing people, hospice nurses, hospice social workers, just end-of-life guides, life celebrants, death doulas, a lot of people who have experienced their own loss and, you know, haven't shut down from it. They've gone out there to help other people. And, you know, we live in a very environmentally conscious area. A lot of people are considering their carbon footprint. And making an end-of-life decision that's environmentally friendly, I think it really helps people reflect on their legacy, and their last act on the planet is an environmentally friendly one. So we see a lot of interest in aquamation and green burial.
Awesome. And tell me, so I know that you do several community events. You have a death cafe. Is it every month?
Yeah, we have two death cafes now. So,
okay.
They were so popular. So the death cafe movement started in Switzerland in 2011, quickly made its way to London in 2012. And now there have been over 19,000 death cafes in 93 countries.
Wow.
All over the world. And a death cafe is just a safe space for people to get together and have open and honest conversations about end of life, death and dying. People will talk about how to care for a partner with a neurodegenerative condition, medical aid in dying. One death cafe a few months ago, people brought up the use of psychedelics like psilocybin or ketamine to cope with a terminal illness. We talk a lot about advanced care planning. It's not a grief group. It's just a safe space to have open and honest conversation. Our facilitator is Sarah Williams, who's president of the Funeral Consumers Alliance, which is a consumer advocacy group campaigning for price transparency within the funeral industry. And she often says, when you come to Inns Well, you eats well. So we have great food. We serve wine, bread, cheese, and people bring a dish to share. It's really a great community of people who want to lift that veil and talk openly and honestly about death and dying so they can better prepare themselves and prepare their family members. So we have these twice a month, the third Wednesday and third Thursday of the month. And then we also have information sessions on the third Thursday of the month where we serve lunch.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Well, I would love to put you on the spot here and see if there is a story or a set of stories that strike you. You know, when you have these kind of events, and people are bringing all these experiences, that you're right, and death is such a taboo topic. We don't talk about it. And now also we have so many ways to treat so many diseases that people can choose to live for, you know, people can live for decades with illnesses that used to be fatal within a couple of weeks. So when you have these, when you create this safe space, I'm wondering if there's a story that jumps out to you. And I know I'm putting you on the spot here. So or maybe there's a story or maybe there's a theme that comes out about things that always come up from the community.
Well, to be honest, what often comes up at every meeting is just, you know, who to call first, what happens when someone dies. And it's amazing. People come to these meetings every month, and there's so much uncertainty about this. And we're all going to face it at some point. And people are just trying to have a semblance of control wherever they can. They mm-hmm. want to prepare themselves and their family in any way possible for the inevitable. And they know how traumatic it's going to be for their family. They have fears about death being painful, about not having any more experiences, not getting to do all of these amazing things that they've been able to do in their life. And they have fear about who they're leaving behind. How will their partner of 50 years cope with their loss living alone in their home? But this is a safe space to talk about that. And what's amazing is how supportive the other members in the community have been.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's wonderful. You know, what really strikes me is what you're saying about when people can get beyond the fear, they can realize that this really is a gift for the people who survive them.
Right.
You know, it's kind of the same as advanced care planning or, you know, anybody making their wishes known. When we can get beyond our fear, ask some questions, find out some information, make some decisions, then we take that off of our loved one's plate.
Right. I think one problem is that with the rise of embalming and the need for a funeral director to be involved, and that's not true. A funeral director doesn't need to be involved. A family can have a home funeral. You don't need to embalm a body. Legally, next of kin can transport their own loved one, bury on their own property. People don't know that, though. And
no.
We've just gotten so far away from families and communities being responsible for end-of-life care that we're trusting this multi-billion-dollar industry to make these decisions for us. And for good reason, many people don't trust the funeral industry. Most funeral homes don't disclose their pricing on their websites. You can find the cost of a washer dryer at Best Buy, Lowe's, Home Depot in a heartbeat, but you can't really determine the cost of a cremation, an aquamation, or a funeral. On that note, Inns Well does disclose our prices very openly, as well as our general price list on our website. But people don't trust the funeral industry, and I think that's a barrier to end-of-life planning. People mm-hmm. need a plan in place.
Yeah, I agree. Now, do I have all my plans in place? No, I have an advance directive completed, yes, but I haven't, you know, put down my aquamation deposit yet.
Well, you know, it's funny. My wife and I, we've run Inswell now for 2 years, and we've been kind of in this field getting it ready for 2.5 years. We just had the first conversation about 2 weeks ago about what we want done with our own bodies. And I want aquamation. Veronica wants green burial at Blue Stem Conservation Cemetery, which is this gorgeous 87-acre nature preserve in northern Orange County that does not feel like a municipal cemetery at all. They plant native grasses. They're restoring the land. And that's where Veronica wants to be laid to rest. I want aquamation. And it's a very personal decision. But the most important thing people can do is ask these questions, attend death cafes, attend advanced care planning workshops, and put a plan in place and really articulate to their next of kin what they want done with their body.
Yeah, especially that last one, communication. All right. That's wonderful. Thank you so much.
Yeah, we're going to take a short break here. We're speaking with Hunter Beatty. He is owner of Inswell, and Betsy Barton is in for Mary Lucas this week, and we're just having a really fascinating conversation. We've got one more segment with Hunter. We've got more questions for him, and we hope that you are enjoying this this great enlightening conversation so far. So please stick around. You're listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's Your Life, Your Care on FM 92.9, 107.5, and AM 680, WPTF, News, Talk, Traffic.
This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF, AM 680, and WPTF.com. Joined by Mary Lucas from Transitions Life Care. Here's your host, Jason Kong.
You're listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's Your Life, Your Care on FM 92.9, 107.5, and AM 680, WPTF, News, Talk, Traffic. I'm Jason Kong here with Betsy Barton in for Mary Lucas this week, and we are speaking with Hunter Beatty. He is owner of Inswell, and they specialize in aquamation, a water-based form of cremation, and we've covered a lot of ground in this episode today. And just before we took a break, we were having a conversation on the importance of communication. And, you know, a theme throughout the show has been, you know, how talking about death is sort of this taboo thing and something that we sort of set aside in our minds. But, you know, making sure that we have some sort of plan or we've communicated our wishes, Betsy, it's really an important thing that, you know, we should be more proactive about.
Mm. Hear, hear to that. Yes. So, Hunter, I'd love to, you know, you were talking about how important plans are, as Jason said, but what's really involved in putting a plan in place if somebody wants to choose aquamation or?
Sure. So I think that everyone should put a plan in place with a funeral home, but that does not mean prepaying with a funeral home. No one ever needs to prepay, and planning is free. You can approach a funeral home, Inswell or another funeral home, and basically you give them information that would ultimately go on the death certificate. You tell this neutral party that's not your family, who may have different opinions about what you should do with your body, you tell them what you want done. You tell them, do you want green burial, aquamation, cremation? Do you want a celebration of life or a more traditional funeral service? So we've helped over 500 members of the community put a plan in place. But more important than even pre-planning with a funeral home is that open, honest conversation with friends and family about how you want to be treated at end of life and what you want done with your body. And an advanced directive, a five wishes document, can really articulate how you want to be treated. So I'll turn the mic over to you. You are much better equipped than I am to discuss advanced directives and five wishes.
I don't know. I was going to say, hey, want to come work with me? Because we're speaking the same language here, you know, especially in a world that is so considers death a taboo, or at least in a culture. It's really important. I have this cartoon that I often show in my presentations that has the Grim Reaper at someone's front door. And, you know, he's knocking at the door and then says to the person who answers, don't freak out. It's just a save the date flyer. But it is important to have a plan. And there's a few parts to having a plan. You know, first is you have to realize that you want a plan. And then you have to figure out what it is that you want. So a lot of times people will just skip right to the legal document. But I think it's worth pausing at that juncture and saying, well, what do I want? You know, am I the hunter or the Veronica? Do I want to be aquamated or do I want to be Green Burial or something else? You know, where do I want my loved ones to be able to come visit me if I think that might be important to them? And when we do a living will or a healthcare power of attorney, a healthcare power of attorney is kind of an odd term because it refers to the person who is your healthcare power of attorney, the person who's going to speak for you when you can no longer speak for yourself. And it also refers to the document, the healthcare power of attorney, that says, here's what I want and here's what I don't want. In North Carolina, it's also called a living will in general. And in North Carolina, we can use the five wishes form, which is legally enforceable, regardless of what you might hear from a medical provider or a legal person. Everybody has their preferences about what form you should fill out, but the five wishes is like a North Carolina driver's license, a legally recognized living will. You know, I mean the driver's license is a legally valid form of identification. You'd never go to a hospital and somebody would say, oh, I'm sorry, we don't accept the North Carolina driver's license, you know, as a means of identification. So the five wishes form is kind of like that. As long as you have it legally, as long as you make it legal, which means you sign it in front of a notary with two witnesses present. It could be any two witnesses that are unconnected to your care. It can't be, you know, the nurse who's taking care of you, but any two people over 18. And in a living will, we have the opportunity to say, first of all, who's going to be my decider? Who's going to be my advocate? Who's going to be my healthcare power of attorney, the person or agent or representative? Who's going to say, Mom is 97 years old. She doesn't need a colonoscopy because even if she has colon cancer, she's 97. We're not going to treat her for that. She doesn't really want that. Or, you know, Betsy's in pain. Give her pain medication. So we have the opportunity to choose our healthcare proxy or agent or representative. We have the opportunity to say what kind of care, medical care, we want or don't want. Then there's wishes three and four are a little bit more soft. You know, how do I want someone to treat me? Do I like it when people rub cream on my hands or does it give me the willies, you know? Do I want people to be super nice and always pleasant, even if it's to the point of toxic positivity? How are we doing? Don't talk about dying. Nobody's dying here. Or do we want someone to just, you know, be with us in the way that we want, you know, however it is that we want people to be with us? And wish number five, I think, is where what we're talking about really comes into play. This is where we get to say, hey, what do I want to happen to the body when I am no longer inhabiting it? And people have done all kinds of things. I know somebody who put a 26-page, and I am not kidding you, addendum to her five wishes form, outlining her funeral. She planned her whole funeral. She wrote letters to all of her kids, biological and adopted. She said, what if I have a stroke? What if I have ALS? What if I have dementia? She kind of laid things out for them. And in the letter, she kind of also said, you know, like, I get it that I'm saying a lot, and I forgive you ahead of time if you can't do all of these things. Like, I understand that. You got to live your life, too. But in that wish number five, we get to say what's important to us. And that's the opportunity not just to document it in a legal form, but actually to have that conversation with your kid, your brother, your parents, whoever it is, so that they're not shocked when you've just died and they're having a hard time and you say you want to be what? Aquamated? Like, no, we don't want to do that to people. We want to lay the groundwork. And in my classes, I say, you got to talk to the haters too. Talk to the people who aren't going to like this, but let me just tell you, this is what I want. start getting used to the idea, because it's just my decision. This should be my decision, and this is what I want.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, we encourage every family who plans with us, and even people who aren't intending to work with Inswell, to complete a five wishes document. And on that note, I'll mention that we're very lucky to have you coming to Inswell December 5th.
That's right.
And the information's on our website, InswellFuneralHome.com, under our events section, and we'll be having a five wishes workshop there.
That's right. We'll talk about the five wishes form, and I'll also be hosting the Go Wish card game. So everyone will have their own deck of cards, and they'll get to sort through, like, hey, what's important to me and what's not so important to me, and begin to have some stepping stones to start those conversations with their loved ones.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about Farewell Magazine.
Sure. So very early on, we realized that Inswell was becoming a resource for people who were interested in burying on their own property, or an anatomical gift program, donating their body to UNC or Elon or Duke as part of their anatomical gift program. And some of these things, we weren't even necessarily going to be involved in the care of that individual. So we decided to create Farewell Earth, which is a 501c3 nonprofit that advocates for eco-friendly death care, end-of-life planning, and reclaiming ritual practice. And the ritual part is not some hippy-dippy woo-woo thing. It doesn't have to be. It's about engaging in remembrance practices and honoring your loved one. So this is a local resource for people living in Wake, Durham, Chatham, Orange, and Alamance County, resources for anatomical gift programs, eco-friendly funeral homes like Inswell, and hospices.
I love it. Sounds like a fount of information. And I know that we could go on and on. I have so many stuff. Now, the more answers you give, the more questions I have. But I know that we need to wrap up this program.
Yeah, well, we're rapidly running out of time. But Hunter, before we go, I know you gave out the website, InswellFuneralHome.com. Are there other ways that folks can connect with you or find information about the death cafes? What's the best way for folks to find more?
InswellFuneralHome.com is probably the best way. We have resources for cremation, aquamation, green burial, planning resources, the five wishes document, and our events. And then we're, of course, on Facebook and Instagram as well.
Perfect, perfect. And yeah, as you mentioned earlier in the show, you're completely transparent about all pricing and costs. It's a good website. Check it out, InswellFuneralHome.com. Special thanks to you, Hunter, for coming in. Hunter Beatty, owner of Inswell. Special thanks to Betsy Barton for doing a masterful job filling in for Mary Lucas this week. We are out of time for today, but we hope you will join us again next weekend. You've been listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care, on FM 92.9, 107.5, and AM 680, WPTF, news, talk, traffic. Have a wonderful day.
You've been listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, on WPTF, AM 680, and WPTF.com. For more information, log on to transitionslifecare.org.